Hi, I'm David Kleon, senior editor at Blogging Heads TV, and this is an episode of Worldwise, and I'm speaking to you from New York City. I'm talking to Tanya Lukshina, who is in Moscow right now. Tanya, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you do?
Hi, David. I'm Russia Program Director at Human Rights Watch, one of the leading international human rights organizations, and I've been working in this capacity based in Moscow for the past 6 years.
Terrific. And we're so glad to have you on. So we are speaking just over a week before the 2014 Winter Olympics begin in the Russian resort city of Sochi, which for Americans who are only beginning to discover Sochi, it's very famous in Russia, is located on the Black Sea, not far from the Georgian border, and has been the traditional destination of the Russian elite on holidays for a very long time. These upcoming Olympics, which are very important to Russian President Vladimir Putin, have been marked by a number of controversies, and we're going to talk about those. These include briefly the security situation and recent terrorist attacks and terrorist threats in the nearby North Caucasus region, which I know you know a lot about. They also include controversy about a relatively new law in Russia banning what's referred to as homosexual propaganda. They include diplomatic disputes between Russia and the United States over everything from Syria to the Edward Snowden story, and they include rampant corruption. So we have a lot to talk about, but let's start with the security and terrorism situation. Tanya, how safe are these Olympics, and how concerned should the United States and other countries be about that?
Put it this way, Russians are actually doing their utmost to make those Olympics safe. And in order to make those Olympics safe in particular, they are really tightening this Northern Caucasus region. In fact, it is the government's obligation to make sure that the participants and the spectators of this Olympics can enjoy the games in safety and comfort. This goes without saying, but naturally, many experts have asked during the past several months, are the Russians going too far with the security measures? Now, I'm not going to discuss the security measures per se and try to say whether they're over the top or not, but what we are really concerned about is the crackdown in Dagestan, Russia's hotspot number one in the Northern Caucasus region, not that far from Sochi, where the Olympics will be taking place in about a week from now. Dagestan is this region with a very active militancy, and the insurgents there perpetrate attacks mainly against police officials, military officials, security services officials, but also at times against civilians as well. And some persons from Dagestan are also responsible for some of the terrorist attacks in other regions of Russia.
Including a recent one in, was it in Volgograd that?
Allegedly so, yes. Well, the
Yeah.
investigation into that one is not finished yet, so I would not make any definitive conclusions, but I think it's pretty indicative that when the recent terrorist attack, a truly nightmarish terrorist attack at a train station in a southern Russian town of Volgograd was perpetrated, that very minute, the media began the outcry of the perpetrator is from Dagestan. These were also the initial comments by officials. The perpetrator is from Dagestan. At the same time, we are literally talking about like 30 seconds after the attack, after the suicide bomber's explosion. So at that point in time, no one could know for certain, no one could even make a reasonable guess which particular place the perpetrator could be from. It was just way too early. There was no information whatsoever, just chaos. At the same time, it was straight like, well, this is from Dagestan. So Dagestan is indeed viewed as a dangerous place. insurgency in Dagestan is really quite active and appears to be quite strong. But then again, Dagestan is this place where during counterinsurgency operations, law enforcement and security agencies carry out abduction-style detentions of Muslims that are being specifically victimized.
Yes.
In Dagestan, the population is, well, predominantly Muslim, but most of them are Sufis. It's Islamist insurgency. And they adhere to the Salafi trend in Islam, specifically. Officials and law enforcement servicemen, in particular, often equate Salafis with insurgents, even moderate Salafis. And what's happening now is extremely disturbing, because actually for a few years in Dagestan, the authorities really tried to use the so-called soft power approach by including local Salafi communities at some of the decision-making processes, or at least starting a dialogue with them, trying to get them involved, trying to engage moderate Salafi leaders in a reasonable conversation. And that actually worked. Now, however, with the Sochi Olympics happening just around the corner, the Kremlin most probably thought that soft power was not yielding results fast enough. So they abandoned that very effective approach in favor of the model of brutal force that they also use for many years now in the neighboring, formerly war-torn Republic of Chechnya.
Yes.
And so, using this brutal force to suppress insurgency, they essentially directed the force against Salafi communities in general. And for several years before that, reports about arbitrary raids on Salafi mosques, about arbitrary detentions of Salafis, there is arbitrary detentions of women simply because they were wearing headscarves, or arbitrary hijabs, I should be saying, arbitrary detentions of men simply because the length of their beards. Such reports were not that numerous. And gradually, some members of the Salafi communities were developing, well, a certain level of trust for the authorities. But now, once again, there are numerous reports about such arbitrary detentions. There are reports about raids of mosques. There are reports about Salafi Muslims being prevented by police officials from actually attending prayers in the mosques in some towns in Dagestan. There are reports madrasas being closed down. And that, of course, is also happening in context of increasingly frequent counterinsurgency operations. And again, during those operations, people are being subjected to abduction-style detentions and disappearances. And the establishment in Dagestan, those communities are essentially being alienated. They're being estranged. They're being treated as second-class citizens. And what it means in practice is that it also makes it much easier for the insurgents to do their recruitment, especially among the young people, because those young people, they have, in all the practical terms, just nowhere else to go.
So it
makes them vulnerable. Yes, it makes them vulnerable to insurgency propaganda. So you see, what I'm trying to say is that Russia actually wanted a quick and dirty solution in Dagestan as
right.
The Sochi Olympics are approaching. They wanted to make sure that the level of insurgent attacks is decreased. They wanted to suppress insurgency as would be 150% necessary as the Olympics are happening nearby. But in order to do that, they opted for a solution which is quite disastrous in a long-term perspective.
Right.
Because, yes, possibly one may say that the level of actual violence this year increased in comparison to, one may say that the level of actual violence last year was somewhat lower than in comparison with the previous year. But then at the same time, the alienation of those communities is growing.
Okay, so it sounds like this growing quick, dirty fix repression is, you know, this is going to have dangerous long-term consequences, you think, for the North Caucasus region and really for all
yes.
of Russia, since, you know, insurgents have struck in the heart of major cities like Moscow. And it's all sort of, the people attending the Sochi Games will be protected from this by layers of massive security that includes direct cooperation with U.S. anti-terrorism forces. So while the terror attacks that might come are unlikely to strike the games themselves or the athletes themselves, they do pose a danger towards other parts of the country, especially because counterterrorism forces are being extremely strained by this presence. And they also... You're suggesting that they're going to exacerbate tensions in the North Caucasus in ways that could have much that could have real long-term dangers. Yes.
Yes, in the long term, this particular solution is very dangerous. It's very dangerous for the Northern Caucasus. It's also very dangerous for Russia as a whole.
Yes.
I cannot really judge how vulnerable other Russia are to terrorist attacks during Olympic Games and. Fingers crossed that all participants and spectators of the Olympics are going to be perfectly safe in Sochi. But the one thing that I can say on the issue is that if there is a terrorist attack in another place in the south of Russia during the Games, there is a likelihood that later on the special services actually would use it to demand more control,
right.
To demand that their mandate is being broadened even further, arguing that, well, we were giving all these possibilities, we were strengthened so much in Sochi for the Olympics, and that's the reason why we were able to make sure that the Olympics are secure. So now we need such mandate everywhere else to make sure that Russia as a whole is finally protected from insurgency. That's, of course, a possibility, but then again, I cannot but emphasize how much we want for the Olympics to be safe.
Yes, understandably. Well, turning to another topic and a different kind of safety, there's been a huge uproar in the past year, certainly in the United States, I think in other Western countries as well, about Russia's crackdown on LGBT rights
mm-hmm.
and the so-called homosexual propaganda law, which, to briefly explain what that is, although no one totally understands what it is, but basically it doesn't criminalize homosexuality per se. It criminalizes advocating on behalf of homosexuality, ostensibly because this would pose a risk to children, which is in and of itself a homophobic statement, but it is broadly interpreted to mean that if, for instance, people attended a gay rights rally or tried to broadcast a pro-gay rights message on television or anything, that they could be arrested for that. Now, of course, this is terrible enough in terms of what it means for LGBT people or their allies living in Russia, it's particularly complicated when you have high-profile figures, including high-profile gay and lesbian athletes from around the world in Russia. And of course, the United States, I think very cleverly, has decided to protest this policy, not by boycotting the Olympics, as some gay groups in this country have called for, but by sending a delegation that includes very famous American openly gay athletes, such as Billie Jean King, to lead it, and also possibly for other reasons, President Obama and Vice President Biden will not be attending the games, and neither will, I think, French President Hollande and a number of other major leaders. Putin has sworn that the law will not hurt Western athletes. So I guess, first of all, do you see any complications the law could potentially pose? And second of all, what about just Russians? How has the law been working out so far for Russians?
Well, first of all, let's get this straight. Mm-hmm. This law is blatantly discriminatory, yes. Just as a piece of legislation. No matter what Russian officials have to say on the issue, but this law actually discriminates Russia's LGBT community. It does. Many times when faced with international criticism and questions from journalists about the so-called propaganda ban, that you can't be gay and live in Russia. Right. You can't be a Russian national and gay at the same time. And you know what? It's true.
In fact, the very notable Russian openly gay journalist, Masha Gessen, I know, is leaving the country with her partner and children, or at least one child, because life has become intolerable for her there. So,
well, Masha Gessen has already left the country with her partner and three children, and she is actually in the United States, and she called herself a political refugee, and the reason she left the country is specifically the propaganda ban.
Yes.
It's already happened. She made that decision, especially as one of her children is adopted, and she was quite frightened, legitimately, that the authorities might actually try to take the child away from her, as this is easier with adopted children.
Right.
Now, at the same time, Putin is right in saying that propaganda ban and no propaganda ban, you can't be gay and live in Russia. It's true, as long as you stay in your closet.
Right.
Because this is what the propaganda law is all about. You are going to be punished if you speak out. You are going to be punished if you actually have the audacity to argue that gay people are just as good as all, that gay couples are no different from other couples, and so on and so forth. But, you know, gay families are also normal family. So if you argue that being gay is being normal, then you are in trouble.
No,
but
Putin...
You can stay in your closet.
Right. But Putin would not dare to apply this law with this international spotlight on him against a non-Russian citizen, would he? I mean, for example, if an Olympic athlete were to speak out on TV in front of an audience of billions and condemn this law and condemn the treatment of gay rights in Sochi... Technically speaking,
with regard to Russian nationals, mm-hmm. the law provides for a fine. With regard to foreign nationals, it also provides for detention 15 days and subsequent deportation. If your question is whether this is likely to happen in Sochi, I don't think so. Even though I don't have a crystal ball, naturally, but I really do not think that the Kremlin would want that kind of embarrassment.
Right.
But at the same time, if you recall, just a few days ago, Putin actually said, if you're gay, you'll be welcome and safe in Sochi, but please leave our children alone.
Right. He couldn't
and
resist.
That's another problem with this law, because not only this piece of legislation, which is absolutely pernicious, is discriminatory and is therefore against Russia's international human rights obligations, and by the way, also contrary to the Olympics Charter, the law also puts in the same basket homosexuality and pedophilia. And this is absolutely unacceptable. This is something that also contributes to the dramatic rise of violence against gay people in the country.
Right.
Because what's been happening during the past year is that with the law being adopted and with the media having this aggressive homophobic debate around the law, including with officials making homophobic comments, including with a very popular primetime talk show host saying things like, what do we do to protect from sodomites, including such terms as faggots and sodomites used on federal television and state-sponsored radio non-stop, literally non-stop, right, for months on end. Vigilante groups sprang up across Russia in different regions of the country, and those groups, ultra-nationalist groups, lure gay teenagers and gay men on fake dates, and then they beat them up, they humiliate them, they hurt them, and everything is recorded on video cameras, and then those videos are posted online so that other people could also watch them, and they're being promoted on ultra-nationalist websites, and it's all being perpetrated with absolute impunity. Their actions are not being investigated, being punished. And I said, actually, yes, you can't be gay and live in this country as long as you do not speak out. But I guess, talking about the vigilante groups, this is not quite so. Meaning that, for example, I have gay friends that used to meet other people, other gay people online. And now they would not dare do that anymore because they're actually afraid of provocations by vigilante groups. They are afraid that they could come to harm, and legitimately so. And frankly, what would they do under the circumstances? There are still, of course, gay clubs operating in large Russian cities, but those clubs are oftentimes attacked by ultra-nationalists who, again, and gay is just not willing to investigate. And also, not everyone who is gay likes the gay club scene.
Right.
So those people, and I'm talking about ordinary people, who are not activists, who are not dying to speak out, who are not dying to say, I'm gay and I'm proud of it, but who had a normal life, now do not have it anymore.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible situation, and I wish we could talk about it more, but I did want to hit one or two more topics. One very important one that is central to these games is, and also central to every aspect of life in Russia right now, is corruption, which these games have been referred to, I forget by whom, but the other day on CNN as the most expensive and the most corrupt Olympics in history. And you would agree with that.
Well, I would agree that they're the most expensive Olympics in history. I cannot assess them from the view of the corruption factor, meaning that I simply do not have the expertise. This is the one aspect of the games that Human Rights Watch did not examine because it's not our mandate. But yes, indeed, the games are really quite costly, the most expensive games in Olympic history, $51 million.
Some of which is going to the unprecedented security concerns we discussed earlier. But there are also, I was watching BuzzFeed editor Miriam Elder on CNN the other day talking about some ridiculous projects that are going on. You know, there was a helicopter that cost millions of dollars that was earmarked for medical purposes, but it's actually some local politician is going to have his own personal helicopter with, you know, fancy leather seats now. It's a lot of stuff like that. I know you're more focused on human rights than corruption per se, but just as someone who lives in Russia and is an observer, can you paint a picture of corruption in Russian life from the lowliest, you know, kind of bureaucrat to Vladimir Putin? Just give us a sense of just how much corruption we're talking about.
Well, listen, corruption is endemic to contemporary Russia. And any sphere of social and political life that one can't speak about somehow has to do with corruption. If you want me to tell you a story that would be relevant to corruption and the Olympic Games, well, there is this one particular, and it's not exactly about corruption, but I still think it's really profoundly relevant. There is this one village not that far from the Olympic venues. It's called Akhtir. And it's a village that literally got punished by the games, or ruined by the games, if you will. Because what essentially happened is this village, which has about 150 or 160 residents, lived off of gardening. The villagers would cultivate fruit and then sell fruit and local produce at the markets. Because of the Olympic construction, a huge garbage dump was built just above the village and a couple of quarries. And then the village's dirt road was paved through the village to the quarries and to the dump. Now, when the authorities paved the road, they somehow managed to destroy the natural water wells in the village, leaving the village effectively without water. Wow. And that happened years ago. So for several years, with the Olympic construction ongoing, the village was basically dying. Because on the one hand, the villagers were suffocating from all the dust and all the construction waste and all the construction noise. And they suffered from the trucks moving through the village at all times. On the other hand, while they could not cultivate their gardens because fruit trees and dust, they sort of do not go together. And I'm talking layers and layers and layers of dust, as in inches thick. But also they had no water. And after numerous complaints from the villagers, the authorities finally built a water pump in that village. Well, guess what? The water pump only functioned for one day. And that happened to be the day when local officials and some and a television crew came to the village for a special celebration of the opening of the water pump. The next day, the pump was shut down, allegedly because of some sanitary problems and technical problems. And I'm just wondering, the government, who is able to spend $51 billion, can't they afford to build a functional water pump in this mountain village, which just happens to be in the Olympic region? Can't they just do that?
Well, where are those $51 billion going, do you think? If not to, say, build a functioning water pump in this village?
Somewhere else.
Somewhere else indeed. No, I mean, this is my general understanding of how things work in Russia is that there is no construction project, no development, no anything, infrastructure that ever happens in post-Soviet Russia that someone is not getting illicitly wealthy off of, or someone who's already wealthy.
That's indeed what anti-corruption groups are reporting. Again, it's not an area where Human Rights Watch has its own research in Russia, so I'm not an authoritative commentator on that particular issue, but indeed, we read all those reports and they're very disturbing.
And they go right up to President Putin himself, right? Who by some reports is secretly the wealthiest person in the world, or one of the wealthiest people in the world. He has giant palatial homes in on the Black Sea coast, actually near Sochi. Some of which I think people deny that, or he denies that they are his homes, but there seems to be an abundance of evidence that they are. But you know, having lived in Russia, I can add
Well,
that.
I mean, there is also Ramzan Kadyrov,
Ah,
the
yes.
leader of Chechnya, who was personally appointed by Putin and who says that his very impressive wealth was given to him directly by the Allah. But again, it's not like we've done any research on that issue either, so I'm afraid
Right.
that's outside of the area of my personal expertise.
Right. We're sort of trading in gossip here a little bit, but I encourage our viewers to do a little bit of Googling on this. This is something that people do a lot of research on. Okay, just one or two more things. Quickly, I mentioned that there's also some this is probably slightly outside your purview of human rights too, but there is some diplomatic tension going into this as well. The Edward Snowden thing, are Russians still paying attention to that story, or has it kind of gone by the wayside?
Well, it no longer draws as much media attention as it used to a few months ago, but it's still sort of on the agenda of Russian media. There was recently an interview with Edward Snowden, finally, for the first time. Once in a while, you see those stories in the papers, but I think it's something that the authorities are quite proud of,
I
giving
bet.
refuge to this high-profile whistleblower. But then, at the same time, I would argue that for the Russian society, this issue is not that relevant any longer.
Yeah, I would
He's
think.
been slowly but surely forgotten about.
Right. And I wish we had time to talk about the other perhaps more consequential rift between the US and Russia, which is over Syria. But we'll skip that for now. Let me just ask one more thing on a slightly lighter note. Are Russians enthusiastic about the Olympics themselves and about any particular athletes,
Well,
despite
thanks for
all the
asking that question. Listen, there are millions of people living in this country, and there is no such thing as the Russians being of one single opinion on any particular issue.
Of course.
Among those Russians of devoted fans, and they are elated. They're very excited about the games. They're very excited about the country hosting the games. They're going to watch the games. They're going to give up everything to be able to watch the games through. That's something that I know for a fact.
Do
At
you
the same
does that
time, there
include
are.
people you know personally, people in
Oh,
your
that totally includes people that I know personally. Some of my friends are just avid sports fans, and they are going to watch like everything. Well, possibly not curling, which
Everything.
is not quite, well, popular
Right.
in Russia. But other than that, downhill skiing, figure skating, I mean, good Lord, of course people are going to watch. And of course those who can afford it bought their tickets. So there are plenty of people who are happy that this is happening in Russia. There are plenty of people in the country who actually view this as Putin's biggest achievement.
Wow.
And that's
That
the reason
could
why the
be.
games are also so special for Putin personally. But then there are people who are unhappy. People who are unhappy because they think that those $51 billion could have been spent more wisely on some desperately needed infrastructural changes and modernization that Russian leadership loves to talk about in principle.
Right.
There are also people who were, as we just discussed, directly victimized by the games. Those people in particular who lost their land, who lost their houses to the Olympic construction without getting adequate compensation. Those people whose living conditions became next to impossible due to the Olympic construction with the dirt and the noise and the everything. Well, but at least for them, once the construction is over, of course, things are going to get better. There are also people harassed and intimidated because they dared criticize the Olympic construction. They dared speak about so-called victims of the Olympics. Again, those who were cheated out of their wages while they worked on Olympic construction projects, those who were cheated out of their housing, also are those who criticize the alleged environmental damage caused to the Sochi region by the Olympic construction. Those activists, those journalists, those citizens, just active, outspoken citizens, have been harassed and intimidated to the point that some of them actually decided to leave Sochi for the duration of the games because they just did not feel they could be there any longer. They could not have a normal life. They did not feel safe. And this is not right. People are not supposed to suffer because of the games, and people should be free to criticize and expose abuses when they see abuses.
Well,
this is not what's been happening in Sochi.
Well, and speaking of people who've criticized and exposed abuses, I can think of at least three very famous Russians who have benefited from these games, probably, namely two members of the punk group Pussy Riot and Mikhail Khodorkovsky, the formerly richest man in the country, who have all been released from prison recently after very high profile cases, I assume at Putin's decree, and I assume as a way to clear the air before the games so that people don't protest their imprisonment. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, really, it does appear that with Sochi just around the corner, the Kremlin made this decision to release the most well-known political prisoners. And listen, we cannot but rejoice that Khodorkovsky, the former oil tycoon, and the two women from the Pussy Riot Band are finally free. At the same time, even though it means the world to them, to their friends and their supporters, it does not mean much if you are talking about the rule of law in Russia. Manipulation of justice for people still remains a huge problem. And while those individuals are free, there are others behind bars for political reasons.
Many of whom are much less famous. So, all right. Yes. Well, I know you have to go, but thank you so much for taking the time, Tanya. I really appreciate
this.
And this has been really informative. So,
thank you.
And I hope, despite everything, the Olympics are not a complete disaster. Although
I really hope so. I genuinely hope so.
Although if they were a minor disaster, maybe that would be useful in some ways. But I hope no one gets hurt.
So. Well, we hope that those Olympics are about sports.
Yes, that would be
and
great.
And that everything goes well. And there are no disasters, major or minor. Thank you, David.
Thank you.